You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G, D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team, 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 all.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you'll get $10 off your first order. And pay attention in a few minutes. I'm going to talk more about Built Bar and some awesome other deals you can get. Locked On Dodgers is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Central, along with, as almost always, Vince Samperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends, and as almost never, Justin Lorber of Future Dodgers. Vince, hi, whatever. Justin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi, Jeff.
Yeah, happy to do it. Today, we're going to be talking with Justin about the draft that happened a few days ago. The Dodgers picked six players. We're going to probably mention each of their six names, but maybe focus on some more than others, but that's the plan for today. First, we want to remind you, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right, Justin. So the draft was last week. It was different than any draft ever has been before, pretty much. It was only five rounds. The Dodgers also had a compensation pick. No, what do they call those? Supplemental?
Yeah, competitive value.
Anyway, so the Dodgers picked six players. And I guess, Justin, first, which player of the six the Dodgers drafted did you walk away most excited about?
Most excited, I would say, Clayton Beter, for sure. He was third on my big board for their first pick, and they ended up getting him at the end of the second round in the compensation, or rather competitive balance round, with the pick that they got in the Kenta Maeda deal. And I was shocked to see him still on the board with his pitch mix, and arm talent is there for sure.
Pretty high percentile in all of, like, you know, the kind of the movement, right, or the RPMs.
Yeah, so he has one of the highest spin, if not the highest spin curveballs in the draft. Dodgers scouting director Billy Gasparino said in an interview that they thought it was the best breaking ball in the entire draft.
That's good. And it kind of closes up the Maeda deal. So it turns up being Maeda and Johan Camargo for Bruce Dark, Gratterall, Luke Rayleigh, and Beter, which seems like a good deal for the Dodgers so far. They got potential lockdown arm late in the bullpen. Luke Rayleigh, who could be a flyer guy, and then Beter, who has potential either way, but seems at the very least he'll be a good reliever, right?
Yeah, he definitely has the stuff to be a high-end back-of-the-bullpen reliever, just with his fastball and curveball.
I read, I think it was Eric Longenhagen on Fangraphs, who mentioned that basically there were three guys that the Dodgers were considering with their first pick at number 29 overall, and they ended up getting all three of them, right?
Yeah, I read that as well. And if it were just Beter and Miller, I would not be surprised at all. But Landon Knack as a first-round pick, now he's certainly talented, but that's just not the kind of range where we saw him mocked or even being discussed before the draft. But, you know, they have their evaluation process, and I certainly don't doubt it based on the past few years and their track record.
Yeah, just going off on Beter, one more point on him. If you had, you know, to make some kind of comp, either a Dodger player or a somewhat known MLB player, you know, you got anything for us there?
Comp? No, I don't want to make the Harold Reynolds mistake and comp him to a Hall of Famer. So I don't have an accurate comp for him, but he's a guy. So it's an over the top delivery. The arm action's a little long. That's something that they may try to shorten up once he comes in, and assuming he signs. And it's a big over the top curveball, but it's a power curveball. So it's kind of low 80s, maybe getting into even the mid 80s, rather than, you know, a Clayton Kershaw big over-the-top curveball, but it's coming in mid-70s. So it's a little bit different than most curveballs you'll see. He adds a slider. He adds a changeup. A lot of people like his slider as well, almost as much as his curveball. Or I shouldn't say a lot. Some people do. But it's a decently solid four-pitch mix, and I'm interested to see how well they can develop him, because he was a guy who was not in the starting rotation last year. He was Texas Tech's closer. He moved into the starting rotation this year, showed much better command, and he's a guy who just rocketed up draft boards from the start of the season to now.
The Dodgers, they've never had success with a lefty named Clayton from Texas before. So what makes you think it can work this time?
Well, he is a righty, so there's a slight difference.
Oh, yeah. Darn it. Forget him. Who needs Clayton?
But based on their track record with Clayton's coming from the state of Texas, we're looking at a future Hall of Famer. There's no doubt about it. He's very talented. There's a lot of upside here. And at that point, I think it's, you know, I think he was probably one of the best two players on the board, either him or Cole Wilcox, the Georgia righty who went to the Padres in the third round.
So it's safe to say the Dodgers kind of have a type, at least this year anyway. You know, I should have, I don't know why I was thinking, maybe I just do think all guys named Clayton are left-handed, between Clayton Kershaw and Clayton Richard. But yeah, the Dodgers took four right-handed college pitchers. Do you think that had anything to do with the specifics of this draft, with, you know, the shortened seasons this year, high school players hardly getting a season at all? Or do you think it was just a coincidence or something else?
It definitely had to do with this draft. This was a really, really strong and deep college pitching crop, one of the better ones that we've seen in recent years. And Gasparino himself said, I think it was before the draft, that the strength of this draft was college pitching and high school bats. And five of their six picks were either college pitching or high school bats.
Yeah, makes sense. So let's just go down the line from here. The first pick, Bobby Miller, out of Louisville. I know I read your report and you weren't initially like super thrilled, but I feel like everything that came out about him after that kind of made everyone excited, including you. So give us the breakdown on Bobby.
So I definitely won't say I wasn't thrilled. He was the 12th player on my 15 player big board for that first pick. And if you eliminate all the guys who had already gone, he moved up to sixth. So it wasn't a lack of excitement. It was more just surprise. I was just expecting some other names. Day of the draft, the Dodgers had been linked to a ton of different high school players all over the board. And so I was kind of expecting either Beter, who ended up going to the Dodgers anyway, Dylan Dingler, who was a positionally versatile catcher from Ohio State. He's caught, he's played center field. We know how much the Dodgers love their positional versatility. And one of those high school players, those were the names that I was expecting to hear. But Miller's a really interesting guy in that, like Beter, he wasn't as far down the board as Beter, but he moved himself into first round range with how he pitched in the 4 weeks that he had this year. The delivery improved. He's got better posture. He's more athletic. He's more into his legs. And one of the things that I'm going to really look for is whether they decide to adjust his, you know, he throws mainly a two-seamer as his fastball. He throws some four-seamers. From the tape that I saw, there's a lot more four-seamers this year than last year. I wonder if that's a trend that they will continue, because baseball is increasingly moving away from two-seamers and sinkers and more towards four-seamers. And he has the stuff to have an elite four-seam fastball. Everyone knows the velocity. It's up into the upper 90s. He's touched 99. And he's still a little projectable. So he's a guy who could wind up sitting 95, 96, 97 when it's all said and done, if he's in the major leagues.
Excellent. So we'll talk more in a minute about maybe some more about Bobby Miller and some of the other picks.
But first, the Locked On Podcast Network stands against racism and social injustice. That's why we, the hosts, are making personal donations to local and national organizations that are fighting for change. And in the month of June, Locked On is matching the total of all host donations up to an additional $10,000. To make your own donation along with us, please visit lockedonpodcast.com/Black Lives Matter.
We talk a lot about Built Bar on this podcast because they pay us to, but we're also happy to do it, as we've mentioned before, because they taste really good. Built Bar is a protein bar, but it doesn't taste like garbage, and most protein bars do. Built Bars are delicious, and right now you can get a rockin' deal. The more you buy, the more you get off. If you buy one box, you get 15% off, two boxes, 30% off, and four or more boxes, 50% off your order. And they are donating all of their profits right now to different charities. I'm just going to read you this paragraph from their website. A child who has hope, who is given a chance, who is able to listen and then to learn, will be a child who is able to love. A child who loves and does not judge any person by his or her color of their skin nor discriminates will change the world. A child who respects and loves all and learns to serve with arms wide open will find greater happiness in his or her life. We focus on these children and support them in their education, finding ways to take them out of poverty, being part of equality, and ending hate and racism. And they are donating all their profits to 5 different organizations that work towards those goals. So that's awesome. Even if they didn't taste good, you should order them just to support a good cause. But because they're also delicious and really, really healthy, healthier for you than any other protein bar, better tasting, fewer carbs, less sugar, just as much protein, delicious. You know all the stuff. Go to BuiltBar.com, enter code Locked On for 10% off. That's BuiltBar.com, promo code Locked On. I also want to talk to you about Rock Auto. They sell auto parts. If you have a car, if you ever need parts for them, I don't know if you guys know this. I was counting how many different kinds of cars there are. The answer is 65 trillion. There's 65 trillion kinds of cars, and that's just on my street. If you go to down to AutoZone or some one of those stores, they're not going to have the exact part you need. Best case scenario, they'll look it up their computer and they'll order it for you. Well, guess what? Cut out the middleman. Get on the internet. You have the internet. That's where podcasts are played. That's what you're listening to right now. So if you go to rockauto.com, you can order it and get the pricing that AutoZone is going to be getting before they charge you the markup. RockAuto.com is a family business. They have all the parts you could need. Just go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts that are available for your car or truck. And write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And keep it locked on, Dodgers. All right, we are back. Let's talk more about the draft. You mentioned Bobby Miller, Justin, still having some projectability. I'm going to tell you my understanding of that word. You're going to tell me how I'm wrong, and then you're going to help me be smarter. My understanding is that means he's still got room to grow into his frame a little bit, put on a little bit more bulk muscle, and maybe even add a tick or two to that already elite fastball velocity. Is that kind of what you mean?
Yeah.
I'm so smart. So, you know, he's a big dude already. He's like, what is he, 6'5", 230 or something?
I think he's about 6'5", 220, 230, yeah.
Okay, so you think he's maybe a 245, 250-pounder when he's all done and throwing 102 instead of 99?
I wouldn't say that much projectability.
108?
Not necessarily like a high school player, but he's still got room to add a little more muscle.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Billy Gasparino had mentioned him as being one that could kind of crack the ranks a little faster than usual. Kind of said that about all the guys that they got. But, you know, is this considering if everything becomes kind of normal in the next year or so, is this a guy we can see, you know, think 2021, 2022? You know, where would you see this if all goes right on his player development side?
So if all goes right, I'd say probably, well, they're going to bring him up as a starter. And unless that changes, I would say 2023, maybe early 2023, maybe late 2022, if he really does well. If he's a bullpen arm, he can obviously move much faster. But as a starter, we're looking at probably 2023 would be my best guess. But we also don't know what player development is going to look like when all of this comes back. And so it's hard to make a specific guess.
Yeah, with basically all 4 of the pitchers the Dodgers took, they kind of have starter hopes for all of them, but all 4 of them have reasons why they might end up in the bullpen. Like you mentioned, you alluded to a bullpen arm, you can get to the majors a lot quicker. You don't have to refine that repertoire, all that stuff. If I told you, I looked in my crystal ball, and one of the guys the Dodgers drafted last week pitched for the 2020 Major League Dodgers. Which one do you think it would be?
Clayton Beter. I think with his fastball-curveball combo, you can throw him in a bullpen right now. I'm not advocating for that, but you could do it.
All right. That was the correct answer. That was what my crystal ball showed me. He actually closes out game 4 of the World Series sweep against the Astros. So way to go.
Wonderful.
There you go. All right, let's get on to second round pick out of East Tennessee State, Landon Knack. a very left-handed name, but he's definitely a right-handed pitcher. What do we have on Landon Knack?
So Landon Knack is one of the most interesting dudes in the draft. And I think this should end up being one of the most valuable picks in the draft, which I will explain. So he's a fifth-year senior, and fifth-year seniors do not normally go this high. And the reason he went this high is not just because of his talent, because he was valued at around a third-round talent. And odds are he doesn't make it to the Dodgers' third-round pick. He may not have even made it to the Dodgers' next pick, six picks later. So certainly value-wise, I've got no problem picking him at pick 60. And so unlike all the other major sports, in the MLB draft, players negotiate for their bonuses. So in the NFL, if you get picked, here's your contract. You might negotiate over tiny things, but here's how much you're getting paid. In the MLB draft, you negotiate everything, which is why there are underslot and overslot bonuses. Now, each pick has a suggested value, which is called the slot value, and teams' total bonus pools are calculated by the sum of that those values. And teams can go over that pool. They can go up to 105% of their bonus pool without being majorly penalized. All they get is a tax on the 0 to 5% over. Once you go over 105%, that's when you lose a first-round pick. It's never happened under the current system. I wouldn't expect it to this year or any other year. A player's bonus now primarily depends on two main things: where they expected to be picked and how much leverage they have. High school players, junior college players, and draft-eligible sophomores, those guys have a lot of leverage because they have multiple opportunities to re-enter the draft. Juniors, which are most of the draftees at the top of the draft, they have about average leverage. So if you take them earlier than expected, you might be able to get them for a little underslot. If they go later than expected, they might be a little bit overslot. And seniors obviously have little leverage because it's their last year to get drafted. Now, this draft changed all of that because every player can go back to school and have another year of eligibility. The NCAA awarded every player in college baseball another year of eligibility. But with the way that teams draft, they're placing an increasing emphasis on age. So a guy like Landon Knack, who turns 23 next month, will be almost 24 next draft. Kind of hard to go up against some of these upcoming juniors who are going to be 21 and these high school kids who are going to be 18. It's just a different profile. So for older guys, their best bet is to get into an organization right now. And why Landon Knack is so valuable is because he's a senior, he's older. He's a guy who you could sign for under slot, under his slotted value for that pick, and redistribute that money elsewhere in the draft to go get a high school player or someone who requires an overslot bonus.
But can Knack throw strikes? That's what I want to know.
Yes, he can. So he led college baseball in strikeout to walk ratio, 51 strikeouts, which also led college baseball to one walk. Those are Hyunjin Ryu numbers. And Knack has actually touched 98 miles an hour, and I do not remember Hyunjin Ryu doing that.
So Knack was taken six picks before Beeter. How much of that do you think is gamesmanship? The Dodgers kind of reading the room, you know, kind of thinking that Beeter, you know, because a lot of what I've read and also hearing your excitement a little bit seems like maybe Beeter has more buzz about him. But maybe the Dodgers just felt like Knack wasn't, like you said, they didn't think Knack was going to be available six picks from then. And they did think Beeter was, or do you think they liked Knack more than Beeter?
I can't speak for them. I can speak for myself and say, I think Beeter's the best pitcher that they drafted. I think he's the best player that they drafted this year. But I think a part of it was Landon Knack is such a valuable pick in this draft because he's a senior, a guy with typically not a lot of leverage, who talent-wise deserves to be picked in the second or third round. And that is very valuable because the other guys that you're going to pick in that range, you can't go as underslot with them, and therefore you cannot redistribute that money to get overslot players later. So you take Clayton Beeter at 60, you're probably playing him either slightly overslot or at slot value. Landon Knack, you get to redistribute some of that money to other points in the draft and to help you get higher upside players later in the draft.
Yeah, on Knack, you know, he was one, I think, along with Miller and maybe one of the other guys, how or beater even as well, who significantly improved from 1 year to the next. But obviously, they only made a few starts early in the before everything kind of got shut down. Does that play anything with it? Do you think some guys maybe their stock rose a little higher than it would have if they would have played out a full season and maybe had a little more ups and downs? Do you think, that's going to be an issue, or is it more, obviously they're going to look at the stuff, but, that's also part of it is some of these numbers are pretty eye-popping when you look at them. But when you think about it, it's really only four starts. So anything can really happen in that kind of stretch.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the big question with some of these guys who had big breakouts. And if you look at all of their sits picks, those are all guys who had their stocks go up between the start of the season and the shutdown. Clayton Beter was a guy who might not have gone in the first five rounds of this draft. Bobby Miller was kind of a third round range. Landon Knack was not in this range. So these are all guys who really move themselves up into these early draft ranges with how they performed in 2020. And the confounding variable in this draft was that not all teams saw all these players for their breakouts. There were breakouts across college baseball, guys who had hot starts. If you didn't get in to see that those guys in the first month, how real can you be sure that they're, how sure can you be that their performance is real and this is a changed player? Because we see guys break out in their junior year all the time. This year, we just didn't get to see it finish. We didn't get to see conference play specifically. So for guys in conferences like the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, that's where their toughest competition is going to come up. And we'll get to see how real is this new performance. And we didn't get to see that. So I do think it's interesting that they took six guys who had kind of breakout performances. Their stock moved up. I think that's indicative of what they thought of them, that they probably thought that, okay, in a full season, these guys might all go higher than we're drafting them, and we're going to take them here, and we're making out like bandits. Maybe, I don't know for sure, but that could be part of their thought process.
So the Dodgers have a kind of famous, they're famous for their player development right now. They have what everybody considers one of the top player development systems in baseball. Do you think when you see a team draft four guys who are all, roughly the same age, right-handed pitchers, it kind of makes me think the Dodgers have a plan for this kind of pitcher. And obviously they're all different kinds of pitchers, but they also have some pretty stark similarities. How much input do you think the Dodgers player development squad had in evaluating these guys pre-draft and helping the, Andrew Friedman put his board together and decide who he wanted to draft?
So from everything that I've heard and read, the Dodgers player development and scouting teams, their cohesion is one of the better ones in baseball. And you bring up a really good point, how if you aren't drafting guys who fit into your player development model, if the scouting team isn't talking to the player development team, you can scout some great players, you can find some undervalued players in the draft, and yet they might not develop to what their potential could be. So what the Dodgers have done really well is not only finding undervalued players in the draft, but figuring out how they fit in their player development model and developing them to their fullest potential. And they've done that as well as or better than every other team in baseball over the past 5 years.
Yeah, hard to argue with that. Okay, so another guy, moving on to, we talked about Clayton Beter, so we'll go into round three. The Dodgers went with their first high school player, Jake Vogel, an outfielder out of Huntington Beach. We've seen a lot about his speed there, but, what do we have with Vogel that you like?
You mentioned it, his speed. He is exciting. He is a legitimate center fielder. It's 70 or 80 grade speed with an above average arm. This is a guy who you can pencil in to a center field job defensively for 10 years if he can hit enough to, merit a position in the starting lineup. And bringing him in to the Dodgers and how well they develop guys offensively. Because if there's one weak spot, and it's not even really a weak spot because he's a high school kid and he hasn't grown into his body yet, would be his power. He makes solid contact. He's a little undersized at 5'11". And a lot of times those smaller hitters get undervalued in the draft, especially at the prep level. So he's someone coming into this organization, isn't like anyone they've really taken at the top of the draft since Jaron Kendall, defensive and speed-wise. And he's the first high school bat they've taken in the top 10 rounds in 4 years since Gavin Lux in the first round of 2016. So that's a demographic that they haven't really hit early in quite some time.
And you saying the names Jaron Kendall and Gavin Lux in the same sentence talking about Jake Vogel kind of underscores how little we know about what's going to happen with a guy like this, right?
Yeah. You know, every high school guy is a project. There are no sure things with high school guys. College guys, you can say, okay, we got a pretty good idea. He might not be an ace, but he can be a number five starter. He can, you know, go into a bullpen and pitch in the seventh inning. But with high school guys, they're all projects. And that's where the teams that do player development really well make their mark. Because college guys, you draft them at 21, they take a couple of years in the minors, they come up 23, 24. If you hit on a high school player in the draft, like a Gavin Lux or a Dustin May, they're coming up and they're debuting at 21. And you have them from ages 21 to 27 before they hit free agency. And players' primes are moving up earlier and earlier these days. So that's really important.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, I had mentioned Kendall last week when I kind of went through just, you know, hopefully that's one that's not where he's going. But, you know, just because that's the easy comparison with the speed and the defense and, you know, kind of the lacking power maybe. How do you see Vogel a little bit different than Kendall in terms of he'll be able to hit the ball and not miss as much as Kendall does?
But Vogel doesn't have the same swing and miss questions that Kendall did when he was coming out. With Kendall, he's a guy who, if he could hit 240 in the major leagues, he's a four-win player because of the defense, the speed, and the power. He's a guy who can hit 20 home runs and play really good defense in center field. Vogel is a guy who hasn't grown into his power yet, but we've seen him make good contact on the showcase circuit, and that was improving from reports early on this spring. Because he's a Southern California kid, he got to play this spring, and teams, especially the Dodgers, got to go see him this spring and see the improvements that he made. And that was something Billy Gasparino talked about, is seeing the improvements he made from last summer to this spring. And that kind of solidified him as a guy they wanted to go after in this draft.
Yeah, it's always an interesting thing. You know, I'm definitely, you hear sometimes when people are trying to be smarter than they actually are, or trying to be too smart, they'll talk about how a home run's not the best thing you can do. You know, because of the pressure that a base runner puts on a pitcher, blah, 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 blah. Obviously, you get a run, at least one run every time you hit a home run. So, and the team with the most runs at the end of the game wins. And so home runs are really, really valuable. But a guy like Vogel, you could actually kind of see, even if he doesn't develop home run power, if he can get on base and with that kind of speed, you know, think of Billy Hamilton, except actually being able to get on base. You know, Billy Hamilton, with his defense and his base running, could have been such a star if he had ever figured out how to get on base. And so you don't have to, Vogel could never develop that power, and he could still be an all-star big leaguer if he can get on base, right?
Yeah, the ceiling for him is a prototypical leadoff hitter, a guy who can stick in center field, top of the lineup, will steal 30, 40 bases a year.
Yeah, that's can't ask for much more than that. All right, let's get into the fourth round. A catcher out of Virginia Tech, Carson Taylor. You know, obviously the Dodgers are known for catching depth, but as you mentioned in your article, and as we all kind of know, you're not drafting for a position here. You're kind of drafting best player available or who you think best fits your team. So what's the thought process with Carson Taylor? Why was he the best fit for the Dodgers?
So there's less information on him, at least that I was able to find, than the rest of the players that they were able to draft. But he's a draft eligible sophomore. He had a good year last year as a freshman, went to the Cape Cod League, which is the premier summer collegiate league. That's where typically the best talent goes over the summer. And he did not perform well at all. What was not widely reported, I haven't been able to find this anywhere, but besides coming out of Billy Gasparino's mouth, was that he had a broken hamate bone in his hand during the summer and he tried to play through it. And if you're trying to hit well, that is not something that's going to help you at all. A broken hamate bone saps hitter's power. And you can see why he put up a 152, 243, 333 line in the Cape Cod League. But he came out this spring. He hit 431. He had multi-hit games in 7 of his 16 games. Now, he's more bat over glove right now. So he might not stay a catcher. He might end up being a first baseman. We're not sure how athletic he is. So maybe he could play some corner outfield, maybe not. We are expecting the universal DH to be implemented soon. So that may be something at the Dodgers' disposal. But when it comes to catchers, you can never have enough good catchers. It's the scarcest position in baseball, good offensive catchers. And if you have a guy who you think can be one of those, absolutely you go and get him. And I'm not too sure what his bonus will be because he was taken a little earlier than I think would have been expected, but he's also a draft eligible sophomore, so he has some leverage. I'm not sure. So that'll be an interesting thing to see kind of play out what his bonus will end up being.
Yeah, the last guy with the last name Taylor out of a Virginia school wasn't too bad, though.
Mm-hmm.
Not a Dodgers draft, but still worked out.
How did he end up on the Dodgers, Vince?
I think we all know, Jeff. I think we all know.
Let's talk about
I think we just want to hear you say
Yeah, in fact, I demand it, Vince.
All right. The Los Angeles Dodgers acquired Chris Taylor from the Seattle Mariners in exchange for Zach Lee.
Zach Lee. I haven't heard that name since the last time I looked at your Twitter account. Let's talk about the Dodgers' final pick of this draft. I believe the second to last pick of the entire draft. Was that right?
Mm-hmm. Penultimate.
Out of Central Arkansas, Gavin Stone, the fourth of the college right-handed pitchers. And I think I saw just this evening, Sunday evening, that he has signed, right?
Yeah, he signed for $100,000, which, if I can look at my board, that is $227,200 under slot. So that is more money for the Dodgers to redistribute, very likely to either Clayton Beter or Jake Vogel earlier in the draft. And he's a guy who, like Beter, moved from the bullpen to the rotation this year and really did well. And he's on a hot streak. His last start before the shutdown, he threw a no-hitter. So maybe he'll never give up a hit again. Who knows? But he's a smaller guy, slender frame. He's been reported to have fastball 90 to 93. But in a bullpen session with a video that I saw from last month, he was throwing 94 to 96, higher spin. It's a bullpen session, so those guys are trying to throw a little harder, so we can't assume that he's going to sit 94 to 96. But it is easier to bring up guys' sitting velocity than it is to raise their max velocity a lot of times. So he's a guy who, a little bit of projectability, perhaps that could play a role as well. Best off-speed pitch is probably a slider. He's athletic. He's explosive off the mound. And he's a guy who, again, a little lower than the pick was a little higher than he was ranked. He was ranked a little lower than where they picked him, but that shows their confidence in him and what they were able to see from him in just 4 starts this season.
Yeah, with the draft being only 5 rounds and the bonus for anyone not drafted that ends up signing being a little less, if there's a, like for the Dodgers, if Gavin Stone was their guy, they're obviously going to get him when they can for sure secure him for more money rather than take the chance. I would imagine he'd be a guy that'd probably go back to school. So, that probably factored in a lot of the fifth round for most teams, right? Is, you're going after your guy rather than better players per se.
Yeah. So what it seems like happened in the fifth round, at least for the teams drafting college players, was they had a few players they liked. They had a group of players they liked and they said, okay, we think all these guys are roughly equal. Who's going to take the least amount of money? Because Gavin Stone signed for significantly under slot. The Angels' fifth round pick, Adam Seminaris, out of Long Beach State, signed for significantly under slot. And that was not a reach by any means. Not saying Gavin Stone was a reach, but Adam Seminaris, you could even say, was a value pick based on where they picked him. And he signed for $250,000 under slot. So what that tells me is teams called around and said, hey, we're going to offer you this. Will you take it? Or will you take your chances as an undrafted free agent or going back to school and coming into what is probably going to be a loaded draft next year? So it's whoever took the lowest offer, that would be my guess. Or it's if they have multiple, it's the player who they like best.
Yeah, knowing what they signed Stone for kind of recolors the rest of the draft. You know, when you talk about Vogel and Beter, who Vogel is committed to UCLA, right?
Yeah. So strong baseball school, strong academic school. They've had done very well in the draft. They had a first round pick this year. They had a third round pick as well. So wouldn't be a bad option for him at all.
Yeah. And so knowing that they've got a couple hundred extra $1,000 to, because of what Stone signed for, maybe that's to go towards Vogel. It does kind of remind you a little bit that the draft is not just about, that's why it's so intriguing to watch, because it's not just about who's the best player. You know, at almost always the first overall pick is the best player, but even then not always, because unfortunately the first pick is always held by the worst team. And sometimes teams are bad because they are either cheap or they suck at what they do. And so they don't always draft the best guy, but you know, I think Spencer Torkelson, was pretty, is that his first name? Spencer? I don't know. American League, who cares? You know, he was a stud, obviously, and everybody, you know, nobody was surprised by that. But when you get down in the fifth round, there's a lot of gamesmanship going on.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought it was interesting to see how many teams took high school players in the fifth round. That was something I wasn't expecting, given the nature of this draft. And given that teams don't have rounds 6 through 10 to go under slot so they can get more money for high schoolers, you've got 5 rounds. Most teams had 5 picks. Some had 6. Some even had 3. The Yankees only had 3.
Astros were short.
Astros had 4. And it really hurts when you cannot make a pick until the end of the second round, because bonus pools, the majority of a team's bonus pool comes from their first round pick, comes from that early round pick. And when you don't have that, that limits the ability you have to move your money around. The team picking first often has the largest bonus pool, and they're able to do a lot with it. That's why we saw the Orioles take 2 high school players who, talent-wise, probably should have gone a little earlier in the 4th and 5th round, and they're going to be able to sign them to overslot deals.
Yeah, that is interesting with the fifth rounders. All right, so far we've only heard of one guy the Dodgers have more than likely signed out of the undrafted free agents. Do you expect there to be any more? Is there any guys that you are looking at that, you know, either don't really have the room to go back to school or that would be willing to sign, or, you know, just kind of the breakdown of the undrafted guys and the breakdown of, I believe, Pito's last name?
Mm-hmm. Robbie Pito.
Yeah.
So I'll start talking about Pito. So he was ranked in the top 200 players coming out of high school. He was a North Carolina signee. He didn't pitch there. He had an injury. He transferred to a junior college and then transferred to Stetson, which, as you may not know, it's a smaller school, but they have a history of producing pitchers. Jacob deGrom, Logan Gilbert, who was the Mariners' first-round pick 2 years ago, is another one. He's shaping up to be a decent prospect, probably a mid-rotation starter. So, school with a good pitching history, and he took a step forward this year as well. If I can find a quote from his coach talking about how he took one of the biggest jumps that he's seen as a coach from year to year. He's a big dude. He's 6'4", 225. He's up to 97. He pitched well against Florida State last year, which, of course, is a big ACC school baseball powerhouse. And there's a lot to like here. He's a redshirt junior, so for him to take the $20,000 and not go back to school, even though he has the opportunity to be drafted 2 more times, that tells you what he thinks about the Dodgers player development. And it tells you what they think of him, that they wanted him enough to bring him in.
Yeah. Corey Kluber also out of Stetson too. So,
that's right. That is correct.
There's been a few Cy Young awards coming out of that university. All right. So I think our last question, overall, you know, picking 29th in the draft, the Dodgers, that's the downside of them always having a really good major league team, is they never get to draft very high. Overall, how would you grade this draft? How do you think they did?
So in my recap, I gave them an A-, and that's both for the players they were able to get and the strategy that they were able to execute. So first off, they got 2 first-round arms. They got 2 first-round talents, and they picked 29th at the end of the first round, and then they didn't pick until the end of the second round twice. So just the fact that they were able to get 2 first-round talents, that alone, you know, gives you a lot of reason to like this class. And then with the strategy that they were able to execute, Landon Knack said that he knew that he was going to be picked by the Dodgers in the second round Wednesday night after the first round. But they called him, and he knew that he was going to go to them. And so what that tells me is, okay, they had a plan. They're going to draft Landon Knack, the best senior in the class. They're going to redistribute some of the money from his slot to other players, and they're going to be able to go upside with some following players like Beater and Jake Vogel, who had interest reportedly in the second round as well. I wonder if the Dodgers were able to make him an offer and say, hey, you wait to the third round, we'll draft you. Here's your offer. So overall, I like this class. They hit on three really good pitchers in the first two rounds. Jake Vogel, a lot of upside. And then Carson Taylor and David Stone, two guys who probably a little undervalued, a little off the radar. But if they're going with them in a draft with only five rounds where you have such limited opportunity to get new talent into your system, that makes me think that they saw something they liked. And that gives you another reason for hope.
Awesome. Well, Justin, thank you for taking time to talk with us. The draft is something that is exciting. Sometimes you don't know for 4 or 5 years how exciting a previous draft was. There's always some excitement right here. So we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. And thank you all for listening to Locked On Dodgers. We are here every weekday morning, as you know, so please continue to listen, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have Apple Podcasts, please subscribe there. Even if you don't use it, it'll help other people find us. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog. And Justin is on Twitter at Future Dodgers. He's also at futuredodgers.wordpress.com on the World Wide Web. You can email us, lockedondodgers@gmail.com, or you can call and leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text anytime you want at 323-863-LOCK-5625. As I mentioned, we're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree, you just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
And now, tell your smart device, play the latest episode of Locked On MLB. Have a good one.
Say D. I say D-O. D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart, all heart and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles. Your Los Angeles. Our Los Angeles.
Do you think we'll really win the pennant?
Bye!